There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 686, July 18th, 2015. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Hello and welcome to all. And today, of course, we have some sad news, and I'll let you take it from here, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. Jules Bianchi passes away at age 25. First F1 death since Ayrton Senna. And, of course, stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the king of K-Town. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, you know, I was doing very good till late last night when I got a text from our friend, Mr. Phil Pegler, giving me this terrible news about Jules Bianchi. And, you know, it was only a few days ago that there was a sort of a press release from his father, or, you know, he had given an interview to some outlet called France Info. And one of the comments that really hit me hard was him saying that what they're going through right now is daily torture, and this is worse than if he had been killed in the racing accident. And only if, you know, a father or somebody close to a person can feel what he was going through. And then we get this news that Jules Bianchi has passed away. Very, very sad. You know, it's, I mean, he was somebody we got to know fairly well, and we've been following his career for many years. So it's very, very sad. And like you mentioned, you know, racing has been very safe for many years. But this is just a grim reminder that things can turn ugly very, very quickly. And with Jules, you know, he was on the verge of becoming a Ferrari driver in the next year or two. He was already in their, you know, driver development program. And this is such a tragedy that this accident happened during a yellow flag situation and fairly late in the race. And if you recall, it was very, very dark also because of the heavy rains there. Today, of course, is not the time to lay blame. We hope to remember a fine young man who was a champion driver. Jules, along with Alexander Rossi and Esteban Gutierrez, was one of the first young drivers we started following who were poised for great success. He came from a racing family. When I first met him in 2008 at Mugello, I was also introduced by my friend Olivier Menu to his grandfather, Mauro Bianchi. Mauro himself raced with success and was winner of the prestigious Macau F3 race in 1966. And he survived a fiery crash at Le Mans in 1968. And that 68 race was won by Mauro's brother, Lucien Bianchi, who also raced in Formula One. Unfortunately, Lucien lost his life in accident in practice for the following year's Le Mans. So there's been tragedy in this family before also. Jules carried the family's winning tradition, won championships in French Formula Renault and F3 Euro Series. After two race-winning seasons in GP2, he almost won the World Series by Renault, but for a controversial push and shove pass from Robin Freins. Jules always made himself available when I requested some time for an interview. In his first F1 season, I met him at Sepang and asked him if he was happy being in Formula One. You would recall they were having a very challenging time with the Marussia car. And with a big smile and zero hesitation, he said to me, "I'm very happy to be in Formula One." And it was good to see the smile on his face that, you know, here he is, where he has worked all his life to be there and finally made it there. My last encounter with him was last year at Jerez during preseason testing. I was talking to a group of young journalists when Jules came up to me to say in his usual low-key style, hello. And that was not the first time he came up to me to say hello, so which I always, you know, thought was very kind of him to be moving up the ladder and still staying humble. And that will be my memory of Jules Bianchi, a humble young man with a determination to reach and succeed in Formula One. He reached the first part of his life's ambition. Unfortunately, the second part was washed away in the rain and tragedy that was Suzuka 2014. Rest in peace, amigo.
Very well said, Nasser. Yeah. Yeah, he goes way back with F1 Weekly podcast 284 is his first foray into the F1 Weekly familia. So I'm going to look into some of these interviews, and we're going to post one of them on this podcast just to show everybody what a great young man this Jules Bianchi was.
Yeah, and a lot of people have posted on their Twitter account from Jenson Button to young drivers and other drivers who raced again in karting. And it's just, very, very sad day for motorsports. And you can just imagine what the family is going through after 9 years of him being, I'm sorry, 9 months being in coma.
Very brutal for the family. And, of course, our condolences go out to them and the entire F1 world, really. I mean, I think this is going to hit everybody hard. And I'm sure there'll be something, some kind of honor mentioned at the next Grand Prix in Hungary. Maybe a moment of silence. I don't know.
Yeah, most probably.
I was gutted this morning when I got the news, but we all must move on.
Absolutely.
And there you have it, Nas.
And you know, there was also a quote from his father saying that after, obviously before Jules' accident, but after Michael Schumacher's accident, he said to his dad that, you know, if something like this was to happen to me, and even if my only disability was I cannot drive, that won't be, I wouldn't be able to live with that. So it's just all that love and passion for motor racing came to a very quick end in Japan last year.
At least he made it to Formula One.
Yeah.
He scored a point in the crown jewel in Monaco with Manor, which puts him in the record books.
Which made them survive the problems they were having.
Absolutely. So Manor will be forever indebted to his great driving skill and his charisma and his friendliness. And no, it's a big bummer, but we move on as we always do in Formula One.
So what do you want to talk about? What gets your attention from the world of Formula One?
Let me see. I have accepted reality, and indeed, Fernando will not win any Grand Prix this season, or maybe next season, or maybe for the rest of his career.
No, he'll get a win. I mean, you know, if there's a race in the ring and he does not have the best car, there's a very good chance he will win. But he will be fighting with you-know-who and also Sebastian Vettel. But, you know, what do you make of this this newspaper from Rome, Italy, Corriere dello Sport, is reporting with authority that Kimi is out the door?
Well, I mean, it's obvious. There's just too much talent waiting on the sidelines to get into a good drive. I mean, look at Hülkenberg. I mean, I think at this stage, after 4 years, we're both stunned that he hasn't been able to get a top drive. So, you know, Kimi, yeah, let's put it this way. Kimi Raikkonen has had a great career. He's been very entertaining. Leave me alone. I know what I'm doing. But it's obvious, along Fernando, along Vettel, he's just a number two now.
Yeah, and Kimi definitely right now holds the key to the driver market. I also think he's gone from Ferrari. The silly season has started before August, which is most of the talk is about the Iceman, who does not want to talk. And if this report turns out to be true, then of course, you know, they're already singing at Scuderia Ferrari, Arrivederci Maranello. Because right now we just don't know who the singer is. It could be Bottas, like you said, Hülkenberg, Jean-Éric Vergne, or maybe Jenson Button. Time and a press conference post-Gran Premio di Monza will have the answer come September. If Kimi is released from his contract, then his F1 career will go over the cliff. And hopefully he will enjoy trading paint with Kyle or Kurt Busch in a roundy-round merry-go-round.
Maybe Ferrari will do a trade with McLaren. Kimi goes back to McLaren, Jenson Button goes to Ferrari. That way Jenson Button fulfills his lifelong dream that he never mentions, but everybody dreams about driving for Scuderia Ferrari.
Very true. You know, and as far as Bottas is concerned, he is very media and fan-friendly, and he beat a certain Daniel Ricciardo in the Formula Renault Euro Cup Championship some years ago. He raced in Formula 3 with success and won the GP3 Championship in his rookie season. And, of course, having Mika Hakkinen and Toto Wolff on your management side does not hurt. And Bottas's father told me that Toto Wolff was one of the early investors in Valtteri Bottas's career, just like Kimi Raikkonen has invested money in the career of Felipe Nasr. And as much as he would like, he meaning Valtteri Bottas, to become the fourth world champion from Finlandia, Bottas knows and expressed his concern that it will not happen with Williams just because the team does not have the big bucks as some other outfits. And recent media reports suggesting that Ferrari was willing to pay Williams around $5 million for his release, but Miss Claire Williams shut down that offer, saying $25 million will be the price for Bottas to ride a prancing horse in 2016. So there is so much information flying around. I think that, like they say, where there is smoke, there is fire. I think Kimi will be fired and they will take on Valtteri Bottas or somebody else.
I concur. There'll be big changes, and we'll know. Often the case is sometimes this news spills out at Monza. So we'll see what happens. But for now, I think we can guarantee Mercedes front row, Mercedes 1-2 forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, but don't be so disheartened. Everything comes to an end sooner or later.
That's very true. And there's always the World Truck Camper Series.
And there's always Pastor Maldonado, to make a dent in the finishing order.
The best part is Pastor Maldonado will probably be signed again next year.
Oh, of course. It will be interesting to see him jump from Williams to Renault, or to Lotus, and then maybe some other team.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Of course, let's not forget that Red Bull continues to criticize Renault. Apparently now they say that their chassis problems is Renault's fault. It's completely gone out of control.
Well, I have an idea for Christian Horner. He recently got married to one of the Spice Girls. I think he should blame Renault for the breakup with his ex-wife.
That's a good idea.
Just get it personal and business also.
Absolutely. Let's just mix it up. Let's have fun. It's all Renault's fault. And I'm going to actually tweet Barack Obama and tell him that he could also lean on Renault as a scapegoat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, of course. Okay,
So.
talking of JB, Ron Dennis has stated that JB has a contract with McLaren for 2016, but so does Kevin Magnussen for 2015. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
And JB himself has been quoted as saying that there is no guarantee of a seat for next season. And as if the Honda debacle was not enough for Ron and his Ronettes, they also have the added burden of two very talented whippersnappers on the books. Kevin Magnussen was on the podium, if you recall, in his very first Grand Prix last year with McLaren. And then there is the second coming of the next Belgian Jacky Ix, Mr. Stoffel Vandoorne, and he has been the alpha male of GP2 championship this year. This and previous championship success in Formula Renault Euro Cup and Formula Renault 3.5, also known as World Series by Renault, should help Vandoorne get an F1 drive next year, either at or through a placement by McLaren at a back-of-the-bus operation to get his feet wet in the wonderful cutthroat world of Formula One. Really, do you think Button will be at McLaren?
It's hard to tell because right now McLaren has their problems are so huge that they're probably scratching their head. Why are we paying Fernando Alonso this huge amount of dollars when in fact, through these development years, Kevin Magnussen would have done just fine?
I am told from pretty reliable sources in F1, Ferrari salary has been paid for years and years by McLaren, by Marlboro money. I am told that when Honda insisted on Alonso or some other top driver to come to McLaren, the deal was they will pick up the tab. So maybe, it's billions of yens that Honda is paying.
That's fine. I mean, I don't care who's paying Fernando, but at this level, when you're fighting in the back with Manor, why there's just no reason to have top drivers. I don't think they expected this problem to be as big and huge as it's becoming to be. I'm telling you right now, they're throwing money away. And not only that, but you've got top drivers that they love the money, that's for sure. Anybody would, but how long do they want to languish fighting with Manor?
Yeah, what I read the other day is that Honda had enough time to come up with this engine and come into Formula One this time around. But the understanding I got from this article and story was that they went a certain route, which now they are finding out is not going to work. So it's just redesigning different thing and, basically starting all over. One thing Honda has refused to do, and I like that, because Eric Bouyer and some people at McLaren were offering them, like Renault hired Mario Illen of Ilmor fame to help them with their engine and whatever the problems are. Honda has said, no, we will resolve this in-house. And I'm sure they will. It will just take time.
Yes, the way the rules are set up, the problem is it could take a lot of time. And in Formula One, a lot of time, let me put it this way, Ron Dennis doesn't like to lose. This is going to boil to a very high temperature at the end of this season.
No, but I think that even people at Mercedes-Benz, especially Toto Wolff, it's even been quoted as saying that they want competition and maybe they will do some sort of arrangement where they don't get the shaft and the Renault and Honda are able to crank up their power. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, maybe Mercedes can go to Kiko's and accidentally leave one of their operational manuals behind.
Why am I thinking Mike Coughlin?
Exactly. There's always an answer to these things. We need more spying and industrial espionage.
There you go.
That's what made F1 wonderful in the old days.
Oh, yes.
Very exciting, but it is what it is. I see you've got some news on Haas F1.
Yeah, this is the top 10 at Haas F1, and I think this is a real deal, and I hope that very much so that this program succeeds. But it's really very, very different than the nonsense we had with US F1 and Ken Anderson. And they're also based in North Carolina, but this team will, I'm pretty positive, will grace the Grand Prix grid in 2016 with a car built by Dallara and powered by Ferrari, which we all know by now. The U.S. team is also using the Ferrari wind tunnel, and this arrangement was recently given a clean bill of health by an FIA official because, there are all these rules that you cannot share this and number of hours you run the wind tunnel. So it looks like this is a pretty decent program going per rules and regulation. According to team owner Gene Haas, they are looking at 10 drivers, and they prefer drivers with current or recent F1 experience. Due to the team's strong connection with Ferrari, their reserve drivers Esteban Gutierrez and Jean-Eric Wurne are automatically strong candidates for Haas F1, at least for one of the seats. In the case of Esteban Gutierrez, they will also connect with the money pipeline of Telmex, the Carlos Slim telco. We all know money talks, and when it rings, you have to reach out and touch the driver who is on the other line. Esteban may have had a so-so season at Sauber, but his credentials in junior system are very impressive. Formula BMW Europe champion in 2008, where he won 6 races in a row, and the inaugural GP3 champion in 2010, where he scored almost twice as many points as his teammate, and his teammate back then was Alexander Rossi. Esteban also won many times in GP2 against the like of Romain Grosjean. So I would love to see, I don't believe in giving a guy 4, 5, 6 chances, but look how Romain Grosjean has established himself a bona fide driver when given a second or third lease by Eric Bouyer. And talking of Rossi, I think he should be part of Haas F1 in 2016, either as a driver or as a reserve. Rossi has all the ingredients, and I say this because of watching him for many years, he has all the ingredients of an above average racing driver. He's quick, feisty and aggressive. All he needs is someone to give him a decent opportunity. And that's where the problem is for most of these young, talented drivers. James Calado is no longer in single-seater, Fabio Limer. These are all pretty good drivers. And we talked about the Hulk, Nico Hülkenberg. His stock has gone up since his debut win in the Le Mans 24 Hours with Porsche. Driving a Ferrari-powered car next season may land him at Ferrari someday. Like Romain Grosjean, the Hulk won in every racing series he competed before his arrival in Formula One. At one time, Willy Weber was his manager, and Nico also had a deal to drive for Ferrari before they rehired Raikkonen. So the guy who really lost out big, with Raikkonen coming back and doing a whole lot of nothing, at Ferrari at least, is Nico Hülkenberg. For the sake of Hülkenberg, perhaps refiring Raikkonen may give the talented German his big opportunity at a big time. Do you see Nico Hülkenberg or Romain Grosjean being at Ferrari, replacing Kimi?
Well, to be honest with you, I think Nico Hülkenberg should be the replacement at Kimi Raikkonen, period. He's the man, he's deserved it, and he's proved it again by going to Le Mans and winning on his first time out.
Yeah, that was very impressive. And now we come to T for two. If all stars and stripes align together, we may have not one but two American-owned Formula One teams next season. Tavo Helman, the man behind F1 race in Austin and also involved in Formula Uno coming back to Mexico this year, has now teamed up with New York financier James Carney to buy an F1 team. Their intended target is reported to be Minor F1 team, recently bailed out from going bankrupt by Irish businessman Stephen Fitzpatrick, who is the founder of a company called Ovo Energy in jolly old England. Minor currently has two paying drivers, Roberto Meri and Will Stevens. Their only points on F1 were scored, as you mentioned earlier, by Jules Bianchi in Monte Carlo last year. Many moons and horchatas ago, Tavo used to be a racing driver in British F3, and his papito was the promoter of the Mexican Grand Prix. In the days when Arnaud and Ferrari made that incredible on-the-outside pass on Gerhard Berger and his McLaren, hence Tavo Helman's close connection and ties with Bernard Ecclestone.
That's fascinating. And it's always nice to see that El Papito helping the children.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Nasser. Outstanding, outstanding, outstanding. I'm really looking forward to this Grand Prix coming up in Hungary, because, you know, it's been a long break. What, two weeks?
Yeah, I don't know how you're taking this, but I've been watching a lot of F3 races and World Series by Renault races, sometimes even old, you know, Formula 2 race from the 60s or 70s. I'm doing what I can to keep myself motorsports happy.
Well, you know what I've been watching?
Mm-hmm.
Le Tour de France.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. How is it going?
It's going great. And it's interesting because usually right after the Tour de France is Le NASCAR.
Yeah, and I understand Lance Armstrong is back in France.
No.
No?
Well, they stopped him at the gate.
The gate at Versailles?
Exactly. But he does come up in jeopardy every once in a while. There was a great question. What international sport has no winner from 1999 to 2005?
Oh, wow.
I know.
I know that your answer was NASCAR.
Le NASCAR. Now, what's interesting about the transition between you have the Tour de France in the morning, and then they go right to Le NASCAR. Well, I have some American friends here in my neck of the woods, and one of them came up to me the other day when I bumped into him, and he was very impressed with Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, wow.
Because he went up to me and he said, Clark, I really didn't realize that Sebastian Vettel was such a big sponsor for the Tour de France.
Oh, great. Yeah. No. So are you, your words, where are you? In your words are in Arkansas or Alabama?
He's out northeast Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I told him, well, Sebastian Vettel is just a lover of quality bicycling.
Yeah, and French products.
Yes, I didn't want to, you know, break the news to them. So there you have it, Nass. Anyway, on that note, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Okay, I'm here in Mugello with Jules Bianchi. Jules Bianchi. I'll try again.
Bianchi.
Okay, I'm here in Mugello with Jules Bianchi. And Jules, you finished third in the race. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Congratulations. First question for you. You are from a racing family. Your grandfather, Mauro, was three times champion in GT class, and your uncle, Lucien, was a Le Mans winner. How old were you when you decided to become a professional racing driver?
I was 10 years old, because I was driving a lot of karting. So with my father, we decided to do it.
Did you get any, were the family supportive of your efforts, or did they try to talk you not going into racing?
No, they support me a lot.
Okay. In karting, you were Asia-Pacific champion in 2005, French champion in 2006, and also did very well in Italian and European championships. How is the level of competition in different parts of the world?
It was all the time very good, because in karting, everybody can be fast, and It's more close the time, you know.
Have you ever raced in the United States? We do our program from US.
I don't know yet. No, never.
Okay. What are some of your best memories from your karting days?
It's my victory in Asia, in Suzuka.
Any other memories or races that stand out?
Yeah, the World Championship in Braga in 2005, because I started last and I finished fourth.
Now, most of the drivers these days come from karting. Can a person become a good racing driver without going through karting?
I think it's possible, but with karting you can get a lot of experience, so it's very good for get a good driver.
What is the most important thing you learned in karting that you now use in motor racing?
To be ready for professional and to think about all the little things you can do to improve your driving.
Last year you were French Formula Renault champion with 5 wins. Which victory was the best and why?
Was Barcelona, because I really like this track.
Nicolas Todd is now guiding your career. How did you connect with him? How and when?
He contacted me 2 years ago, and we signed a contract 1.5 years ago.
What was the biggest difference you felt in driving when you moved from karting to Formula Renault and from Formula Renault to F3 Euro Series?
Difference from karting and Formula Renault is totally different for me, because it's not the same driving. You have to, in cars you have to think about your driving, and in karting you just drive. And in Formula 3 it's same like Formula Renault. It's not very different.
Is there a big difference between the car and the handling of Formula 3 and a Formula Renault car?
It's more, it's quite same.
What goals have you set for yourself for 2008 season?
Sorry?
What goals? What would you like to win or achieve this year?
I want to do all my best. I will do all my best to improve all the time my driving and to be better and better.
Who do you see as your main competitors among the rookies this year? And you're also a rookie in this series this year, right? So who do you think would be the main competitor for being Rookie of the Year?
I think Mika Maki is very fast, so we will see.
How is the relationship between drivers? You know, in F1 nobody talks to each other. Do the drivers in this series talk to each other? Is the atmosphere friendly?
Yes and no. With some drivers, yes, and with some others, no.
Can we hear some names where you have friends with and some drivers are not friendly?
I am friend with John Lancaster and all my teammates, but after I cannot say.
Okay, your favorite track and city that racing has taken you? You've been to quite a few places in this world. What track do you like and what city?
I like Mugello.
Looking forward to next year, what is the game plan for 2009?
I don't know. I have to make a good championship this year, and we will think about the future after.
Okay. Felipe Massa is also managed by Nicolas Todd. Has he given you any racing tips or invited you over for pasta?
Yeah, one time in Paul Ricard, I go to see him and he was very friendly.
And you already told me you have never been to the US, but do you follow American racing scene like IndyCars or Le NASCAR?
Yeah, I look sometimes.
Who's your favorite in American racing?
I don't...
Danica Patrick?
Sorry?
Danica Patrick?
She's your favorite? Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, good. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? And we have listeners in France also. So if you could say a few words in French also, I will appreciate. Anything you want to say to the listeners? Tell them about your website and, you know, anything you want to say. Nice things, you know.
Yeah. If you want to know me better, you can go on my website. It's
And your website address is?
It's Jules-Bianchi.com.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru and Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir.
Nas, before you start, real quickly, because I know you've got a lot of information, a lot of cautions and phantom debris, but quickly, I want to hear some comments about LCH not being allowed to enter Wimbledon.
The Royal Box, you mean?
Of course, you know, the pinnacle at the top. I'm not talking about the cafeteria.
Exactly. Well, you know, Clark, I'm a firm believer that people should do whatever makes them happy, whatever they feel comfortable in. But there's a thing called know the environment you're getting into. It's like if you are trying to sign a record deal with Death Row Records and you have your appointment with Suge Knight at the Leavenworth corporate offices, you know, you can go with earrings and tattoos and that will work out. But if you have an interview for a CFO position at IBM or, you know, JP Morgan Chase, you know, a visit to the Brooks Brothers might be a better idea. And I thought the only way you would understand is this. If you are hired by your favorite oil company, Elf for Total or Motul, and they send you to Saudi Arabia for a six-month assignment, I mean, you're smart enough to know that you don't go there and ask for Canadian bacon with your hummus for breakfast. You know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're saying. What I do is I just eat a lot of Canadian bacon before I fly out there. And then after that, we're sticking with kebabs.
There you go. Lamb kebabs are very delicious, I'm told there.
Exactly. So, of course, yeah, I don't know what's going on. The problem is when you're a star, they think that they will be in such awe of you. And those diamond earrings sparkling in your ears, blinding them with your fame and fortune. Some of these people think they could just walk into any royal box. But I'm glad to see we still have restaurants that say you must wear a tie and that sort of thing, Nasser. It's called proper upbringing.
Yeah. And, you know, before this happened, he was also given a sort of a lecture by Her Majesty because he was in her company and said something which was more on the, what you say, what's up, S.A.?
What's up, Queen?
Yeah. Okay.
I could see him calling her the Queen Bee. Buzzing around this town. Wow.
Boom. Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, now let's go back to Motorsports Mondial. Today we have action from the hills of Austria and the sand dunes of Holland. See what happens when you talk about Saudi Arabia? The sand comes up.
And it gets in everything, you know, the nooks and crannies. It's there for years.
Yes, and to the state fairgrounds of Milwaukee. We start with a Dutch street at Zandvoort, which means foot on the sand. Round 7 of the 2015 European Formula 3 Championship. Three race formats saw Italian Antonio Giovinazzi take victory in race 1 over Swede Felix Rosenqvist. The finishing order was reversed for race 2, with Felix winning over Giovinazzi. Third and final race of the weekend saw victory for Marcus Palmer. Felix was second and Giovinazzi third. The Italian now leads the championship. And those who are interested, most of these F3 races are on YouTube, or you can just go to the FIA F3 website, and they have these, you know, media links and social media links, and you can click on YouTube. It takes you, and so you can watch any race, whether it's at Monza or Silverstone. So I'm having a lot of fun with that kind of stuff. And you know what is very impressive, Clark? The video quality, even when you are just looking through YouTube, it's very, very impressive. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. I'm waiting for the new digital re-enhancement of Dijon 79.
Now, that'll be awesome. DTM, the German Tin Tops. Shall we call them German NASCAR?
It is German NASCAR. Let's face it. It's all three manufacturers. And boy, I have to tell you, BMW is called whoop-ass.
Yeah, but you know, they turn right and left. And the cars are very nice, by the way. Anyway, they are doing two races per round these days, different from last year. Winners were race 1, Marco Wittmann for BMW, first win of the season for the 2014 DTM champion. Portuguese driver Antonio Felix da Costa was the winner of race 2, also at the wheel of the ultimate driving machine. Do you remember a few years ago, da Costa, who is still under contract to Red Bull, he could not lose a race, whether he was in F3 or World Series by Renault. And the following year, it just all became kaput for his career. That's why we don't see him in Formula Uno, even though he's a very good driver and a pretty nice bloke.
No, not only that, but Da Costa said he thanked driving in mid-pack last year for this win. He said that taught him a lot, and I was very happy for him. You know, you can't succeed in the upper echelons of racing, but DTM is definitely respectable. I think it's beautiful, and I can't wait till they come here because we can get the Bratwurst out and the Löwenbräu.
And let's not forget the St. Pauli girl.
Love the St. Pauli girl.
Yeah, and Desiree for sure should audition for that job.
I think she's already passed the audition.
Oh, really? Cool. Now, you know, they were trying to get this DTM. There was supposed to be a DTM USA series, and then they were going to work something out with the sports car scene. But somehow it is not happening as they were expecting it to. Okay, now we go to your favorite series, World Series by Renault, the 3.5-liter version, raced at the Red Bull Ring last weekend. Winner in race one on Sunday was Oliver Rowland over fellow Brit Dean Stoneman. Dutch driver Nick De Vries was third. He is in the McLaren Driver Development Program, and his manager is Pepito of LCH. You know, talking of Pepito, what's Lewis Hamilton's father's name, sir? First name, please?
I have no idea.
Well, anyway...
I know it's not Fernando.
Yeah, I'm just missing right now. Anyway, he at one time was also representing Paul Di Resta, and then there was a bitter lawsuit between the two. And it was amazing what kind of filth and dirt was thrown at LCH's papa. And some of it he confessed to, yeah, that part is true, which was kind of interesting. I love when people deny things they know to be true again and again and again until one day they say, okay, here is proof positive. What do you say now?
Exactly. I mean, that's something that happens at F1 Weekly every day in the conference room.
Yes, but we keep it under the wraps.
Totally.
I'm not talking about the in-flight burrito wrap, that is.
Correct.
Sure. Nick De Vries at one time was the youngest karting world champion and then youngest double world karting champion. Much was expected when he moved into single-seaters, but then he took 3 years. I cannot believe he took 3 years to win Formula Renault 2-liter and McLaren still kept him. It's very mind-boggling. Not that I have anything against the kid, but you know, when you're in a driver development program, if you don't performed by the third race, they put you on a launching pad.
Very true. And when you're in Renault 2.0, 1 year tour and you move up to the next level.
Yeah, for me, you know, the way things are these days, if you are taking Renault 2.0 or Formula 3 or GP3 more than one season, then you have just cut your chances by 60% of getting to Formula 1 as a, you know, professional driver with the top team.
Exactly.
Okay, the 3.5-liter World Series by Renault car is very close to the GP2 car. This year, Nick is still looking for his first win in the series and is currently fifth in the championship with 71 points compared to 166 points for championship leader Roland. Let's see how long Ron will keep him on the team's roster before sending him some tulips and the famous Western Union telegram saying, "Your services are no longer required." And there will be a message in that telegram, call someone who cares, like Nick Heidfeld or Heikki Kovalainen.
Wow.
Yeah, this can get pretty ugly, you know.
We're very familiar with that here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Friend, your homeboy, Matthew Vassevere, was the winner in race two on Sunday, his third win of the season. Roland was second, and Roy Nissany from Israel claimed his first podium of the series by finishing third. Looks like that the championship will go down between Matthew Vassevere, who is very good, and Oliver Rowland, who is also very good. Now, absolutely. Oliver Rowland, you know, and there's another English kid who's doing pretty good, Jordan King. These names I've been hearing when they were in karting, you know, when you're talking to people in karting, who's good, these two names used to come up. Okay, sir, from the Red Bull Ring, we go to the Vila Real Street Circuit in Portugalistan for World Touring Car Championship. Headline in race one was Pechito wins in Portugal. The Argentine driver, also known as Jose Maria Lopez, started from pole position and led from start to finish. The story for second place was lobed by Lopez for a Citroën 1-2. Another Citroën 1-2 in the second race of the weekend. Winning driver was Ma Qinghua of China ahead of Ivan Muller of Alsace in Francia. Now, Mr. Rogers, you are the expert on any and all things Francais, so I have a question for you. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Now that Ma Qinghua is a winning driver for Citroën, do you think their menu at the track includes Beijing beef, which is my favorite at Panda Express, or sweet and sour escargot?
Well, sweet and sour escargot has got to be on the menu. That's mandatory, and let's leave it at that.
Okay. The top three in the championship are Lopez, 322 points, leading the way from Muller on 267 points, and Sebastian Loeb is 230 points. Now we go to your second favorite series, IndyCar, from the Oval at State Fairgrounds, Milwaukee. Victory number 34 for man from Le Mans, Sebastian Bourdais. No, Dash Nevis was second and Graham Rahal third. Our man Monty was fourth and pole sitter from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, was fifth. You know, talking of Montoya, do you remember when Montoya hit that jet dryer?
Absolutely. Who could not forget that?
Yes, and I was reading yesterday that the driver of that jet dryer has passed away. And I know poor guy was very shaken up by the Monty putting a big fire on his truck. But I don't think his death is related to the Monty's running into him.
I hope not.
Yeah. Monty was fourth and pole sitter from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, was fifth. I think I already said that. Montoya leads the championship, 439 points. Highlight of his season was his dramatic second victory at the Brickyard. Kiwi Scott Dixon is second on 385 points. Graham Rahal is the highest placed Honda driver in third place, which is pretty impressive, 370 points. Montoya is with Team Penske and Dixon with Chip Ganassi Racing, and both are Bowtie Brigade members in plain simple Spanglish, Chevy drivers. Now, Indy Light, this was good news because we interviewed this kid in his younger days. Felix Solares, the cat from Puerto Rico, scored his first win in the series, and he used to race in F3 Europe series and also the British F3. Now we go to racing on two wheels and MotoGP action from Sachsenring, Germany. Marc Marquez leads the Honda 1-2 with teammate Danny Pedrosa second, and the Dr. Valentino Rossi increasing his lead in the championship with his third place finish. Looks like Marquez is coming fast to mount a late season charge to go three championships in 3 years of MotoGP career. But he surely has really extinguished any championship aspiration that Danny Pedrosa had. What do you think?
Very true, very true. But what can you do, you know? I don't know.
Now some sad and very, very pathetic news from South America. There is a gentleman, he's 77 years old, Oscar Espinosa Fangio, and he is now claiming that the legend of legends in Formula One, Juan Manuel Fangio, was his father. And what the judge has done, he has ordered that Fangio's body be exhumed to allow a DNA test. And this was set to be exhumed on August 7th, which is not too far away. Then another guy has come up making similar claim, so this thing has been put on hold. The exhumation has been put on hold for now. And, you know, Fangio was never married, but he had a lady who was his companion for many, many years. But, you know, this thing to me, Clark, is just so late in the game. A 77-year-old guy claiming so-and-so was my dad. And just involves the name Fangio. To me, this was very, 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 this was more cheesy than Velveeta.
I agree, and I was really surprised the judge issued the order for the body to be exhumed.
Why were you surprised?
Well, the gentleman who's saying this is late in life, and I mean, he should have come out years and years and years ago, and it's not like there's going to be this, you know, huge amount of cash at the end of the rainbow. I mean, I think it's bizarre, but on the other hand, he wants to prove to the world that he's Fangio's son. It could be true.
Right, yeah, you never know. But I was surprised because Fangio is such a, you know, legend worldwide. You can imagine how much respect he has in Argentina. But I don't know what his financial situation was when he passed away in 1995. But I do know for many, many years, Fangio had he was the Mercedes-Benz distributor for Argentina. So I don't know if the family still has that business or ties. But money or no money, I'm sure this is about money, and this is very, very pathetic.
It is very pathetic, but we'll stay on top of the story, Nasser.
Okay, sir.
Thanks for another wonderful Motorsports Mondial. Too bad it happened on this particular weekend.
Yes, very sad. And again, my thanks to all the people for listening, and look forward to the next race.
And I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Bye-bye.